Could you give me your name and address?
My name is Reverend Joseph Carter. I live in Jackson, Louisiana, Route 1, Box 47.
Now, could you tell me first about your great-grandfather in Reconstruction days?
Well, I don't know if I can tell you the straight story, but my great-grandmother told me that my great-grandfather was in the movement of registering and voting when Negroes could register and vote in the West Feliciana Parish. And it was a two-party system. And one party wanted him to advertise them and the other party, so he went to one of the parties. I don't know what one it was, but the party that he didn't go with, they caught him on the highway going to St. Francisville with a bale of cotton to the gin, and they hung him on the contents of this registering and voting in the West Feliciana Parish. And from that on, well, I don't know how long they registered and voted after that, but finally they ruled it out. And that's the only thing I know about my great-grandfather from my grandmother's side. Uh-huh. And from that on, well, I didn't know anything else about what went on.
And could you say again what you were saying before about your cousin that got killed and how you said that you were going to try to...
Well, after I was growed up, I was a small boy, but I did have understanding enough to know that around that they should shoot a Negro down in the highway like they would a wild beast. And I had some men, Mr. F.C. Wilcox was the high sheriff, and he had about 13 men went to this man's house to get his boy, for claiming that he broke in the store. And the boy ran, and they was running the boy, and the father wasn't home. It was my daddy's first cousin. And when he did get home, they told him that the people had been to the house at the bar, and the boy was gone toward Gilmore Bar, and he went on down the highway behind him riding his horse. And one of the men lagged behind. He lagged behind, and this boy's daddy, Andrew Parker, come riding along. He shot him in the breast with buckshots and killed him. So on my way to my cousin's wake that night, I say to my cousin, Anna May, I say, if I ever get old enough, I'm going to see if I can't do something to break up this mess of the white folks shooting the colored people down like they do.
And she remembered that when you got arrested.
And when I was arrested and put in the jail, she lived in Kenner, Louisiana, where when I was put in jail, the people just got on the phone and it called all of my people from New Orleans to Chicago and let them know that I was in jail all the way in Houston, because that's where my daughter was, and they called me. So when Anna May got the answer, she said, well, sir, I said, Josie, if you ever live long enough to get to be a man, he would do something to break up these people shooting the colored folks down. And that's what he must have meant.
Uh-huh. Yeah, now, around about 1955, you tried, or you wanted to go try to register, right?
Yeah, well, the cause of me to get in the movement or try to register, we was in Baton Rouge at the New God Baptist Church, and we had the 4th District Missionary Baptist Association there, and the white ministers of that town was in the meeting with us, and one of them preached a sermon with us. And the instruction was to us that lived in the rural is to go to our county seat and put in an application that we wanted to register. And they said to us, don't go one by one, but get in a group. saying, appoint you a committee, and if you don't want to appoint a committee, call your parish conference to your closest church, to that county seat. Then all of the ministers get together and march to the courthouse and ask the register of voter to register, because at one go, they may shoot him down and say he did something he didn't have any business. So, but ain't nobody going to shoot no whole parish of ministers. So we come back to the parish and we had conference and we decided that we would try, and we appointed a meeting at the St. Andrew Baptist Church to appoint a committee. And I was the only man at that church that night. And my wife, when I was leaving, she said, Joe, be careful now. I said, you're going down there. And if ain't nobody at that church, and the lights ain't lit, so don't you drive up to that church, though. So it's right on the street. So you just park on the street, tell somebody to come. So I told her, okay, and when I did get on there, well, wasn't it, lights wasn't lit, the church wasn't open, and wasn't nobody standing around, and I parked on the street just in front of the door of the church, but nobody didn't come. So I stayed there. We were to meet at 7:30, and I stayed there until 8 o'clock, and nobody never did come, so I got in my car and come on back home. I went to the conference, the next conference meeting, which is the Four Winds and the Falling Month. And I asked them what was the trouble. They laughed and told me they changed their mind and sent me an answer. And I asked them, by who? So they just laughed and said, well, we just changed our mind. And I spoke to them in the conference. I said, you know one thing? I said, y'all ain't nothing.
Yeah.
So that was the end of the registering. And then until 63, then it come over again. Now, not knowing before 63 that the co-workers had been through here, and suppose they had been the all of the preachers in the parish to try to get the movement on, I believe that was around about 62. So they couldn't get nobody. They went to Tunica, to Reverend I. Mitchell's church, and they got them to leave there. Told them if they didn't leave, they had to tell the people about them because they didn't want no people in here like they were. So the co-workers had to leave. And the next news we got, then Rudy and Danny was in Clinton.
Rudy who and Danny?
Rudy Limbaugh. And Danny, what his name, Mitchell? They was over in the East Feliciana Parish. And I was in St. Francisville, and I heard that the co-workers wanted all the ministers to meet them at New Gideon Baptist Church over from Jackson. Reverend Anderson was the pastor. So when I got the news, I just I had my coat and everything with me, and I just kept on from St. Francisville over to Wilson. And when I did get old, there wasn't nobody there. But Reverend Anderson stayed about a block from the church, and I went to his house, and I inquired from him. He said, yeah, they're supposed to be here now. I said, but something got them tied up. I said, but you wait around a while, and probably they will come. So we sit there a while, so he said, well, so let's go up to the church and see what's going on. They ought to be there by now. And when I did get up there, Alvin McKenzie from this parish and John Brown, they was there. Reverend Washington, Simon Washington, and Rudy and Danny, they was at the church where when me and Reverend Anderson got there, my brother-in-law John Brown said, now this is a preacher from over home, the West Feliciana Parish. So they related to me this story about what was the amp. So I told him, yeah, if I get the papers and see what's going on, so I'll go down there and ask the British. And Rudy say to Danny, says, give him one of the papers. Well, Danny give me one of the papers, fill out. And I read it. I looked it over. And I said, I believe I can do this. So he said, well, see, can't you do it? So I've taken another one of the blanks and give him his blank back. And I went on over and I wrote it up and brought it back to him. So when I brought it back to him, he looked at it and said, oh, yeah, see, you know how to fill them out already. See, why you learn that? I said, well, I had one of them. My daughter went to Southern University and had her to fill out one, and she brought it home and told me to study that because someday I may would have to register. And I've been studying that one. I said, then Reverend Washington got one from Mr. T.W. Thompson, and I looked over it, so that's why he said, well, you can go down there tomorrow and register. Well, that was Thursday. I told him, well, I'm on my grind. I said, but one thing about it, I wouldn't want to go by myself. So Reverend Washington said, Reverend Davis said he wants to go down there. So Rudy said, well, if Reverend Davis go, would you go? I said, sure, I'll go. So I said, now, how will I know? He said, well, will you find Reverend Davis? And I said, well, if Reverend Davis wants to go, I said, you tell him to send me the date that he wants me to meet him in St. Francisville. Well, that was the following Thursday. They got me word back and said, Reverend Davis, to meet him at the courthouse at St. Francisville at Abbott's Barbershop.
Now, can you remember the month and the day?
It was the August the 10th, because I was 55 years and 5 days old the day I went to jail. And I could easily think of that, because I went 5 days after my birthday. So he said, meet him down there for 9 o'clock. Yeah, I do know. So I went for 9 o'clock. I was there. I met Rudy and Danny Davis there. So Reverend Davis was a little late. He had a flat. He come about maybe 5 or 10 minutes after his hour. So when he got there, he said, I'm late. He said, I had a flat. He said, you ready? I said, these boys, well, they check us with these papers. He said, well, I don't need no checking. I said, well, I don't need no checking. But he didn't stop his motor. I said, well, go ahead, I'm gonna catch you. So, and on his way down, I cranked up and got behind him. Well, I caught him down by Miss Brasso's down the street. Well, the Red and White Store was in operation at that time. And on my way down, it was a lady cranked up a car and looked up the street, and she let Reverend Davis pass, white lady. And I was for about a block near from Reverend Davis, and she let me pass, which the white people in West Village in the back in St. Francisville, if they see a colored person coming down the street, and he colored, they just cut her out in front of him, but she honors us that moment. And she got behind us. So when we get down to the courthouse, it was a space for one automobile at park. But Reverend Davis being in front, he didn't stop in that space. He went on the low end while we could park together. So when I got down there, I told him, I said, Reverend Davis, I said, you got a spy behind you. He said, yeah. I said, yeah. He said, why she? I said, she stopped in that hole back there. So, he said, she ain't got out. I said, she waiting to see what we gonna do. He said, you reckon that's a spy, sure enough? I said, yeah, that's a spy. I said, I could tell from when I passed. I could tell the look on her face that she was out for something. I said, now, I tell you what we do. I said, now, she gonna beat us in the courthouse. I said, but she waiting up there to see what we gonna do. I said, let's start across the street. And when we started across the street, she broke across the street. I said, now, stop. Well, you see, we was at Reverend Davis' car. Well, when we started across the street, I pretended that I had left something, and I went back to my car. And she got on the bank. And after we stopped coming across, she stopped up on the courthouse square and pretend as she had lost something. I said, you see, she's waiting to see what we were going. So I said, now let's go and watch her go in the courthouse. So we went on in, crossed the street. And when we got to the steps, while you go up on the bank to go in the courthouse yard, she was going in the courthouse door. So when we got in the courthouse, we didn't see nobody, no way, no how. We walked, and I said, that's the sheriff office there. I said, that's the jury room there. And we agreed, but when we come to one or two little doors, didn't have any sign on. So it was some boys working in the courthouse. They were repairing, making it larger on the low end, and they was moving a heavy something. I don't know whether it was a door or what, but it was a gang of them, and they was pushing it. And some pushing, some pulling. So we asked them, says, we looking for the registration office. Do y'all know why they say it's around there? I said, oh, no, that's the sheriff's office. I said, the registration office, why did people register to vote? So they didn't know. We went on back, and we saw the old Cecil, Mr. Boytrain Harris. He was sitting in his room. We looked through the glass door and we seen him. And Reverend Davis said, yeah, Mr. Boytrain, he'll tell me. So when he started to Mr. Boytrain door, Mr. Boytrain made it to the door. And he cracked the door. So what's the trouble, Rodolph? He said, we're looking for the registration office. Can you tell me why that is? He said, up there. Now, it was two doors up there. Now, we didn't know what door it was. So we went up there. And the boss over these boys, but they were working. They was jail boys then, working. They did something, and they was working their time out. So when Reverend Davis asked him, said, why is that a registration office? He said, right in there. So we went down the alley, little hall, to the door. Now, we couldn't see nobody in that courthouse, but by the time we got to the door, Mr. Fletcher Harvey, he come out of the door and shut it behind him and backed up against the door. Said, good morning, boys. Said, what can I do for you? Well, Reverend Davis said, we come to see if we can register to vote. He said, well, I can't tell you no. Said, but you got to bring something, you got to show me something before you can register to vote. And Reverend Davis said, well, Mr. Fletcher said, I really don't understand. You said, now, if you tell me what you mean, probably I can produce what it takes. It's where you got to go back to your ward you live in and get your two registered voters and bring down here to identify you. Reverend Davis said, well, the high sheriff can identify me because he was raised right next to me, and all of y'all know me. And said, you know me too, Mr. Fletcher. He said, yeah, but I couldn't go upstairs and swag. He was Rudolph Davis. By the time he said that, the high sheriff, the deputy sheriff, and the Bliss, they called him. I didn't know his name at that time, but they told me who he was. They were standing in the hall looking down in the little hall while we was at the registered office. So WC said to me, hey, boy. Hey, you boy. Well, I know I wasn't a boy, and when he made it through the call, well, I just looked around at him. I said, were you speaking to me? He said, yeah, you come here. So I turned around. When I turned, I left Reverend Davis and Fletcher Harvey still talking. I don't know what they say. So when I got out to the hall, he walked from facing to this hall door back toward the sheriff's office with a little card. It was a fraternity card, a Mason brother card, and a pencil in his hand, I ain't pen. And he said to me, he said, what's the matter with you fellas around here? You ain't satisfied? I said, not exactly. He said, well, if you ain't satisfied, no. I said, for now on, you will be. He said, did you hear? Did you hear what I say? I said, I hear you. He said, go ahead on back while you come. So I walked on. He said, I ought to arrest you now. I ought to lock you up. I didn't see anything. I just kept walking. So I walked from him, and when I did get to the hall door to go back into where Reverend Davis was, he yelled at the deputy sheriff, said, grab him. Didn't you hear him raise his voice at me? So when he said that, consider your arrest. I wheel out the hall on 1 foot with both hands up. And they started searching me and my shoe top all the way up to my head. So he said, put handcuffs on. Put him in jail. Get him on out of here. So they caught me by the arm and they put my arms behind me and carried me out to the car. And handcuff him in the jail car in the courthouse because the handcuffs was in the car. Then they put me face to the car and held my left arm still behind and opened his car door and pulled his handcuff out off of the seat in a little scaffold and shook the scaffold off and locked my left hand arm behind me. And when he locked the left arm, I put the right arm back there for him to lock it. So, well, when he turned my right hand loose, I pulled my head off and laid it up on top of that car. Well, after he locked my hands behind me, I couldn't get in my head. So he took my head off at the top of the car and slammed it in the back. So get in there. I went on in, you've been over there in Clinton in that damn mess. I said, what mess? Over there where them damn co-workers at. So I ain't been to no Clinton. I can't tell you today what I've been to Clinton. So he said, who been talking to you? I said, ain't nobody been talking to me. I said, have a television, a radio, and read the papers. I said, the federal government said all citizens read. I said, I'm a citizen because I never did anything in this parish and nowhere else to be disfranchised and not be a citizen. So they carried me on to jail. They locked me in jail. They left Reverend Davis at the register's office with the high sheriff. Well, I don't know what happened, but after the high sheriff got rid of Reverend Davis, they had put me in the jail, then they come and got me out of the jail and brought me to the office. They took fingerprint, they took my height, they took my weight, they questioned me about my children, why they lived there, what was the address, my sisters and brothers, if I had any. I had two sisters live in Houston. One brother lived in Houston, and I was the only out of my mother's children living in this parish. So I had to give them all of that. But after they took my picture and my fingerprint and whatnot and questioned me around there, they carried me back to the jail cell. And when they was getting ready to lock me in, the high sheriff come in. He put his clothes on. Take him out. He don't need nothing else no. Say, make him take a bath. He must have. You stink. I didn't say anything to him. So they put me in the jail and made me pull my clothes off. Well, I was pulling my other clothes off because he said, take them off. And when they said, pull your clothes off, they went back down there in the office somewhere and got a monkey suit. All-in-one coverall suit. So they said, pull your clothes off and put this on. Well, I was pulling everything off. I was giving them my shoes and all. I wasn't keeping nothing. I wasn't going to have nothing but that. I said, well, you can let him keep his shoes. I said, oh, y'all got to let me keep my shoes, eh? So I was pulling my clothes off, putting my shirt over my head. So well, let him keep his armor clothes on. Well, they give me my underclothes and my shoe, but all the rest, my money, my hat, my watch, and my pencil and everything else I had, they taken that. So they locked me back in the cell then. About an hour, a little bit later, the high sheriff come back and he said to me, says, who been talking with you? I said, everybody talk with me. I said, you talking with me? I don't mean that. Who been telling you what to do? I said, ain't nobody been telling me nothing. You ain't gonna tell me, hey? I said, well, I done told you all I'm gonna tell you. I ain't been talking with nobody. So he got hot, I guess, and walked on back down the hall. And I don't know what he said. He mumbled something, but what it was, I don't know. So after that, I didn't see him no more. So about 2:30, the little deputy sheriff, Laval, he brought my dinner down, some boiled grits, and a piece of sausage, and two slices of light bread, and a paper bag. So when he got to the cell I was in, he said, come get it. So I went, taking it out of his hand, and he said to me, he said, eat with that spoon up there. I said, up where? He said, up yon in them grates. I said, who, me? He said, yeah, if you would have stayed in your place, you wouldn't have been in here. I said, yeah, stayed in my place. I said, you mean to tell me I was out of my place for going to the courthouse to ask the register and a minister? I said, I was born and raised in this parish, I'm 55 years old. And I say, I'm leading a group of people, and I'm not only supposed to lead the people to church and to tell them about heaven, I'm supposed to lead the people to tell them how to live. I say, you mean to tell me that I'm out of my place to ask for my rights? Well, he looked at me. I said, I was here before you were. I said, this is my home. I said, was born here, was raised here, married here, ordained here, and pastoring the people here. I said, then you mean to tell me I'm out of my place? I said, man, you don't know what you're talking about. I said, I've been here all my days, and I know I'm a citizen. So he didn't say any more, but I understood. It had been told of me that he would be the man that come and bring the lunch and speak to the prisoners. And whatever they say, then he take it back to the high sheriff. And then that night, the high sheriff brings his gang and beat you up on what you told Laval. So I was looking for him that night. So they didn't come so far. But before the thing happened, we had our FBI come. And then he had to come and get me out of the jail. And the FBI wrote me up. That was before night. Now, I don't know what would have happened if the FBIs wouldn't have made it there. Because he had told the FBI that he hadn't arrested me. And he hadn't seen me. And none of his deputies had arrested me. Well, the way I feel about it, they must have been aiming to dismiss me that night, but the FBI had made it there before time. So when they come, he rolled me up, and then that night about 9:45, they had done sent me word. He's told me that I could get a bond, $250 for the stolen piece. And my nephew, Willie Sweezer, come to bond me out, but they wouldn't let him bond. And he went to the deputy's brother, which was, they call him Boss Daniel, supposed to be my great friend. And he wouldn't call on and ask him and wouldn't go my bond. Told Willie Sweezer it was against his religion for to go my bond. So Willie asked him, say, against your religion? Say, yeah. Say, I didn't say religion because I don't belong to the church. I say religion. He said, well, you told Joe anytime he needed you to call you. Said, now the guy said, well, what are you in there for? Say, you know what he in there for. Say, call on and ask your brother. Said my phone out of order. It won't ring. He said, no, it's out of order. I said, but let me tell you one thing. So I didn't want preacher to stay in there all night. Said he won't stay in there all night. Said, but if he do stay in there all night, said when he get up in the morning, he better not be a scratch on him nowhere. And he jumped in his truck and just kicked rock back on him and come on home. So that night about 9:45, somewhere around there, Rudy had got money from somewhere which it was already fixed. And he come in and give the sheriff the $200 and they come down and he claimed I had $45.75 they had took from me. But he claimed that the deputy had locked it up in the chest and had the key and he couldn't give me my money, but he gave me some of the money that Rudy gave him. My money and my driving license was in my wallet, and he told me to come back and get it in the morning. I told him, no, not me. I'll send back and get it. I said, y'all got my driving license. Now, the first thing you'll do, you'll get out there on the road and know you got my driving license, and then you catch me and charge me for driving without license, eh? I said, that's what y'all trying to do now, eh? So he said, we won't bother you. I said, well, I ain't coming. So Rudy come the next morning and he take my car and went down and take my key and other words come and they had the key. He went on down and brought my car to me. So that was the end of that first starting of the registration.
Yeah. Now, after that, you sued the sheriff for false arrest, didn't you?
Yeah, after that.
For how much did you sue him for?
$100,000. Other word, before that, it was put on a $100,000 bond. And then after which, a week or two later, then I filed a suit for $100,000 for false arrest and using me with some bad language. That's what he sued for.
Uh-huh. And that's never come to court?
Never come up yet. Because after that, they had a hearing, and they had me down in St. Francisville, and the Attorney General, Jack Grimmel, he went to the federal judge and asked him to throw it out. But say they had, I had went back and had registered, and he didn't see why it was necessary to hold the sheriff, but the federal judge told him he couldn't throw it out because he was tired of what they was doing. So that case is still pending. I don't know if it ever come off or not, but the suit is still on.
Okay, and just now could you tell about what happened the following October?
Well, after I got out of jail, we come back home. My wife told me when I got home that night, if I go back, she was going to leave me. And I told her, get her clothes and go now because I was going back the next day. But I had some neighbors had made it here, and they told me, don't go back till next day. But wait and allow them a chance and let them study the farm. Instead of letting me go back by myself, we would go back in a group. Well, we met the first meeting after I got out of jail. We met at the Pleasant Green Baptist Church up here, pastored by Reverend Simon Washington, which we met there two nights, two the night straight. Well, after which they wanted to change and not meet in the same church every night on account of the figure that they would maybe set a bomb or something for us. If we were meeting at that church, we would meet at this church tonight and the next church another time. But when Nathaniel Smith said, no, I'll tell you what you do. He said, bring it up to the Mason Hall in Long Hill. So from that second Tuesday night, we pointed from Pleasant Green that we would meet at the large hall at Long Hill. And we met up there, and the first meeting we had up there, we only had 17 men. which two of them didn't live in this parish, with Reverend Washington and Reverend Wilson, lived in the North Baton Rouge parish, which they lived in Zachary. But they was up there. And it was about 14, 15 of us. And them two made 17. So they decided that they wouldn't point no time that night, but about three meetings later, they decided when they would go. Well, they had a pretty good group at that time and started meeting. The first night we had 17, but the next night it come on until we maybe had 100, 150 was meeting. Then they decided, that same night with that 17 they decided, because they asked who was willing to go down to the courthouse with Reverend Carter when he go back. And all was willing to stand, and they all stood but Reverend Quiet. And Reverend Quiet said that he didn't stand because he wasn't going. Well, with that 14, we decided that we would, that 14 would be enough if didn't nobody else go. So from time and again, every time they meet, well, we got lots of forms and started showing the people how they fill their forms and how to answer the questions and whatnot. So we worked it until we getting up to the, coming up to the 17th. And then we asked how many was ready to go or who was able. Well, you see, the way we did it, we'd give you a paper and let you study it. And if you come in and fill your form out, we would take that paper from you and tell you do just what you would do if you was in a courthouse. We would take that mock form from you and just give you just a natural form. Tell you get over there and fill that out. You answer your own questions and you fill your own paper. Well, when you did it like that, we know you was capable of going down. Well, we made the arrangement for the 17th day of October, 63. And we had Brother John Brannan say that he would take the bus if it was enough of them. We had 44, I believe, if my memory serves me right, got on that bus that day. We went down to the courthouse. When we went down there, Ronnie, he went in and talked with the district attorney, which is Kilburn from Clinton. And he talked with the registrar voter, which is Fletcher Harvey, and he told him that he had four already in, which was four white. And he wouldn't finish them four white until 1 o'clock. And we could meet back there for two, because for one, they was got to take dinner, and they'd be back in the office for two. So Ronnie come back and told us, and what they did, they had the secretary, Joe Cottrell, to take so many names. Well, my name was the first name on the list to go in, because Ronnie said you've been there once and you know why to go, and I want you to go back first. So they give Ronnie the orders that we shouldn't stand on the courthouse lawn. We couldn't stand on it. We had to sit on that hot bus from 8 o'clock that morning till 2 o'clock. Yeah, John Brennan had to go back to Dawson High to pick up his student. Well, for 11:30, we left the courthouse and went to Surveyor's over to Solitude. That's why we took lunch at Surveyor's Saloon. We come back, and when I went in for 2 o'clock, I would have been in there for 2. But the white folk blocked the door, the front of the courthouse. But me and Ronnie went on, and we went up to them, and they was calling us everything they could call us but a human. Black, everything, you this and you that and whatnot. Some had the pistols in the hands, some had the rifles, and some had shotguns, and some had catapults. So when we got up to them, we didn't walk upside them, but we went close enough to them, and they didn't move. So we just stopped around and said, well, let's go back, Rev. They done blocked the door. Let's go back. So we come back to the street and went to the corner. When the went to the corner of the courthouse lawn. Ronnie looked toward the river. He said, "Is that a dodo?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, we can get in the courthouse down there. Let's go down there." I said, "Let's go." And when we said that, it was three FBIs on the bank next to the graveyard over there. And when we started down the street, they come off of that bank and went on the courthouse head over. Well, that stopped the scrummage. One stood with his back looking at the angry mob. One stood with his back watching me and Ronnie. And one stood with his back to their mob looking down toward the river through the courthouse hall where we went on in. So when we got there and made it about 1 minute after two when I got in the sheriff office, in the register office. And we went up to the door and we knocked and said, "Come in." Well, I didn't open the door. I told Ronnie, "Open it." Ronnie pulled the door open. Well, Joe Cottrell, he was born and raised right over there and used to eat cornbread and syrup sitting on the floor with me and my sisters. He said, "Come on in here, Joe." Now, he wasn't rough at all. Joe wasn't the secretary. He said, "Come on in here, Joe." So when I went in, Fletcher said to me, he said, "Who is this?" I said, "This that Joe Carter you see on the paper you don't know." He said, "I know you, Joe Carter." I said, "Well, I have a driver license. I said, I have a preacher's pass and I have a social security card." I said, "Now I have three identifications here. What one you want?" So he said, "This will do." He said, "Sit down." And he said, "Sit down, Joe Cottrell." He said, "Well, you read that up there before you sit down." And I said, "All questions and ask none." And I read that up there, and in the window said 40 minutes. I said, "40 minutes. He said, "Yeah, 40 minutes after I give you this card. You get it out of my hand. If you ain't wrote it up, you get out of here." So he gave me the card. And when he gave me the card, I looked at my watch. He looked at his watch, and I looked at mine. I said, 1 minute after two. 19 minutes after I got the card in my hand, I give them back to him. He said, "You finished?" I said, "I done wrote everything up on there." So he looked at that card. The first one, he turned it over. He looked at it, and he laid it aside. He went back and got the other one, and he looked at it, and he laid it aside, and he reached back and got the other one. And he kept me in there 35 minutes. He kept me up there like 5 minutes of that 40 minutes. So he gave it to Joe, and he said, "Look at this, Joe." So Joe looked at it. He said, "A damn thing wrong with this." So he picked up the other and he looked at it. He said, "Ain't a damn thing wrong with this." He said, "Well, I have a full question right." He said, "All them question rights. And he don't acquire for but four no hearts. He done pays. Give him his damn paper and let him get out of here. He just done pays." So I got my paper and come on out. So when I come out the courthouse where Mary, I think that was his name.
Mary Hamilton.
So when I come out with the paper in my hand. And she said, "Oh, Joe done passed." And she jumped up around my neck. And they had a man at the door with a Kodak. He said, "Let me take your picture." And one of the white fellows backed up in the corner there and said, "Yeah, take that some bitch picture because that's the last one you'll get of him." So he was saying that. And the fellow said, "You done read it?" Now I said, "Smile for me." So I held the thing up and smiled at him, and he snapped it. We didn't know the man was back there, so I come on out. So when I did get outside, Joan was gone. And they had the other 43 people sticking upside that bank in front of the courthouse next to the graveyard. Said it was looking like buzzards and coons on a limb. Saying, "Bill Daniel said, you wait till night. I'll get them off of there." We saw him brought two boxes of shells and carried them up in the courthouse. But the registration office was closed at 5 o'clock. And that thought all of us at home for 5 o'clock, you see. So that was Thursday. They went back Friday. Well, I didn't have to go back. Well, Friday night, they invaded John Brown's house to cut his tie. They done a lot of shooting around his house. That was that Friday night. But in order to stop us from coming down there. But that Monday after the shooting was, they had 75 down there instead of 43. So that's the way the movement went. And we've been doing very well. treating her very tough, but it's better than it has been so far.
Jan, has anyone given you any trouble since then?
No, nobody give me no trouble. I don't know for why. Of course, I don't give them no reason. Because I got out of jail the 10th day of August in 63. Get away. And I haven't been in a store in this parish since. I haven't bought a gallon of gas in this parish since. I don't go around the places for them to interfere with me because I'm not so much afraid, but I don't want nobody to hurt me, and I don't want to hurt nobody. So the best thing for me to do, since don't nobody give me nothing, I have to buy all I get anyway, because they say they was going to starve me out. So I just buy my food while I work at Baton Rouge. I don't give them no trouble. But one store I've been in this parish, that's a little colored store down here on the 61 highway, why they killed that girl, and they say they killed her because she was feeding the civil rights workers free. And they didn't do a thing about it. Nobody did nothing about it. They couldn't even rest. They had a man. The man went to a house and got her and carried her to Baton Rouge and brought her back and said she jumped out the truck and killed herself. But it ain't so. Because if you jumped out of your car or truck making 45 or 50 miles an hour, you're going to skin up. You're going to bruise yourself up. And wherever you lay, you got to bleed. That woman didn't have a half a pint of blood while she was laying there.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.